Welcome to the Hearts of Oak podcast. Hearts of Oak is a populist free speech alliance that seeks to push back the cultural Marxism that pervades all areas of our society. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and an open and free discussion on any topic are the bedrocks to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. We hope you enjoy this episode.
So thank you so much for joining us. If you're watching live or if you're watching on a pre-record, any of our pre-record, we upload later on to Gab, onto Rumble and onto BitChute. Hopefully Rumble will be live very soon. Or if you're listening on Podbean or any of the other audio downloads, thank you for joining us, whether you're watching or listening. And as always, it's great to have the one and only Gerard Batten tonight. Gerard, thank you so much for your time.
That's all right, Peter. Thank you very much for inviting me on, and hello to everybody who's tuned in.
I think you were last when we were chatting about Afghanistan, but tonight we have a whole range of topics and definitely enough to keep us busy for the next 50 minutes. So
there's never a shortage of news.
There never is a shortage of news. And can I also ask you, if you enjoy watching, please do subscribe, please do share. We have probably around 40-50% of viewers on YouTube are subscribers, the rest aren't. So if you haven't already, do click that subscribe button, do like and share the videos, whichever platform you're watching. And it's great to have more and more watching over on brand YouTube and also on Odyssey. So we try and get on everywhere, and also live on the website heartsofoak.org/livestream. So let's jump in with our first story. Well, what was our first? Oh yes, Robert Peston is our first story. Let me scroll down. And Robert Peston claims it's a bonus he still has a show as a white middle class man. ITV's political editor says there was more competition within every sector. And there he is. Yeah, he is white. He is a bloke. He may even be heterosexual. But he's claimed that keeping his career as a white middle-class male is a bonus during a BBC podcast, as women and individuals from ethnic minorities are gradually getting more recognition. I didn't think you were a fan of Robert Peston, Gerard.
I was on his show once when I was leader of UKIP. And it was something that happened to me more than once. They ring you up and ask you to go on. I said, what do you want to talk about? Brexit and how we leave the EU? Yes. Are you going to talk to me about Tommy Robinson and Islam? Oh, we might touch on it. So I said, okay, I don't mind if you touch on it, but I want to come on and talk about Brexit. I go on the show, and then right from the first question, it's a relentless attack regarding Tommy Robinson, Islam, you're far right. The usual agenda that I got time and time again on everything that I went on. So it was, well, I think I gave as good as I got, but it was a depressing precedent to all the other interviews that follow after that. So I'm afraid I don't have a very high opinion of Peston or any other of the the mainstream mouthpieces that we see on the media and in the press. But there we are.
I think on this, they were, as we were chatting before, Gerard, you were saying that the same survey found that 53% of journalists are women. So, goodness, well, we're going to have to sack 3% of them.
Yeah, first of all, from the tenor of this comments that he's made in the article, I wasn't sure whether he was complaining about the fact that he was lucky to still be there or whether he was thinking that he should be gotten rid of. So, I mean, he didn't really seem to express his opinion on it and which way it should be going. And if you look at the article, it says here, according from the 2020 Labour Force survey, 92% of journalists come from a white ethnic group. This is higher than the average proportion across all UK workers, which stands at 88%. The findings found that 75% of journalists have at least one parent in one of the three highest occupational groups, which defines social class, and I presume that they are professional and extremely well paid. The same survey found that 53% of journalists are women, compared to 47% of men. Well, so what's it telling us? It's telling us that if you want to be a journalist, you have to be well-educated, you have to come from a well-off family and gone to a good school, and you're probably going to be a white woman, actually, rather than a man, predominant, you know, slight majority, 53 women, yes, far too many. Okay, well, I thought, how does that, that looks terrible, doesn't it? All of these white people taking these jobs away from so-called ethnic minorities. So what's the overall percentage in the population? So I went on the government website. Now, the figures are for 2011 for the census that year. And, of course, they're going to be way out of date now because the government has been busy ferrying in as many illegal immigrants as they possibly can, including running a cross-channel ferry service for them. And they're bringing in as many as they can, untold tens of thousands every year. But anyway, the figure in 2011 was that white people make up 86% of the population, Asian are 7.5%, black are 3.8%, mixed ethnic are 2.2%, with others making about 0.5% to 1%. So we get slightly over 100% with that, 100.5%, so they've rounded up somewhere. But if 86% of people are white, then you would expect a similar proportion to be in most professions or jobs, wouldn't you? Because then you would have representation in accordance with the makeup of the population. But, of course, it's already said in the article that you have to be come from a well-off family and have had a very good education in order to become a journalist anyway. And Peston says here, quote from the article, everyone else, apart from him, I suppose, working on Peston is a woman or a person of colour. Well, that means that white men are dramatically overrepresented on, white men are dramatically unrepresented on Peston's programme by his own logic in accordance with the figures that we've just read from the government website. Now, this made me think about something. People of colour, they've kind of stopped talking about black people now, talk about people of colour. Back in the American South, when you had real discrimination against black people, anyone that was mixed race or could pass for white, passed for white because they would then get the benefits and the privileges of being white without the discrimination against people of being black. So they didn't wonder if they could avoid it. Some people would pass for white if they could. It's now going in the other direction in some societies, like America, like here, where people of colour now, covers a whole big territory, doesn't it? So people of mixed race, for some degree or another, may want to identify as black, or ethnic minority or people of colour, because the only group of people that you can now legally discriminate against in our society are white people. And the BBC, where Peston did work, I believe, was a prime example of this, where they advertised for interns but only from black or ethnic minority communities. So if you're a white person, especially a white working class person, then you can forget it. You're not even going to get an interview. And I believe that they did this in some other professions as well when they were looking for people to come on as interns or, for work experience. So the last thing you want to be in today's society is white, and at the bottom of that rung is white working class. Now, if he feels guilty about being a white person in that job, then he should resign and move over and go and get a job in a sandwich bar or sweeping the roads and let somebody else of colour move up into his job. Wouldn't that be the principled thing to do? Of course, he's not going to do that. And in fact, as I said, the most underrepresented group are white working class people. So how about he resigns and hands over to an articulate white working class person and let him do the job? And Tommy Robinson springs to mind. He'd make a great presenter on a current affairs program. But do you think he's going to do that? No, of course he's not going to do that, because these rules only apply to other people. And we've got another example of this coming up in the program. The rules don't apply to people like Peston. They only apply to other people.
Well, maybe he just realized he was white, or maybe he's transitioned from a different color. I don't know. But
who's that?
pest him. So it's just dawned on him. Just one or two comments for Jared. So off-grid 21, Jared keeps looking younger. He must be doing something right.
I'm not in politics anymore.
David says, great guest lately. The mRNA guy, I was Robert Malone and Jared Batten being spoiled. There was one or two. PW says, Mr. Batten, I love you and there's nothing you can do about it. So there you go. There's your.
Well, I hate to be politically incorrect, but I hope that's a female that's just written that.
I don't know. And Jeanette says, Jared, looking well, looking good. Paul, Jared, always an entertaining guest. So it goes. There were a few others.
By the way, let me add on this story that I don't care what color people are who I present TV programs or are journalists. What matters is whether they qualify through merit and ability. And of course, you don't qualify through merit and ability to get into journalism now. You qualify because you have the right political views. You have to be a card carrying member of the Gardenista class in order to get anywhere near a job with the media. And I know that through press officers that we had in UKIP who will tell you, I think we did have work for the BBC at one point, who told us, you wouldn't get anywhere near it if they didn't think you qualified I don't know if left wing is the right, I'm trying to think of another term because I'm not sure they are actually left wing, but if you don't follow the party line, you wouldn't get anywhere near a job with them. So if you've got any views that are not in line with that, then you just keep quiet about it. And every day when they have their conferences over what stories they're going to cover, whether they be on the TV or the radio, then they have an agenda which they stick to. And I don't care, all these people, don't worry, Andrew Neil's different or GB News will be different. No, they're all the same. When it comes down to it, there are certain stories that they must cover in a certain way, and they do.
Let's move. Someone says he could always resign for the sake of diversity.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I said. Yeah, I think he should. Yeah, do the decent thing and shoot himself.
So this is metaphorically. So this is Haberdasher School. Now, actually, this is interesting because I didn't realize this story, Jordan. I passed the school twice this week. I have my different mug, my flying mug of my flying school, which is round the corner because this is an Elstree and there is an Elstree aerodrome. That's a wonderful aerodrome to fly from. And this is Haberdashers Aske Schools Drop Slave Trade Investor's Name. So two private schools are to drop the name of their 17th century benefactor over his investment in the slave trading Royal African Companies. Haberdashers Aske School for Girls and also one for Boys were named after Robert Aske after he left money to found a school. And the schools in Elstree and Hertfordshire said the change followed a review into their historical legacy. Of course, it does cost $21,000 to go there, so I've never been there. So, Jared, this is I can't. Maybe they should hand the money back instead.
Well, shall I go through the story a little bit?
Yeah, go through it.
I saw this by accident because I was on the tube during the week and I picked up the Evening Standard, which is the should be renamed as the COVID Propaganda Official Journal for London. But I picked it up and did the crossword. Having finished the crossword, I had a whiz through the paper. And I saw this article from Tom Newton Dunn, whose dad used to be an MP, an MEP at the same time as me. In fact, me and him appeared, because he obviously was out and out Europhile and a Remainer. And in fact, we appeared on a couple of platforms together. One of them talking to a school, actually. It wasn't this one. So I know his dad. I think he was the editor of the Daily political editor of the Daily Mirror or something. But anyways, he writes for different papers. And this story, it's interesting from the story and also the way that it's presented. Now, Robert Aske was a wealthy silk merchant in the 17th century. He was married, I think, two times, but never had any children. So he left his estate in order to fund the education of promising young people. And it was £32,000 at the time that he invested into this, or he gave to this fund, which equates to about £56 million in today's money. So everybody thought he was wonderful because he set this school up 330 years ago. It's prospered over the years. It's educated hundreds of thousands of people. I looked on their website today, looked at their admissions policy. You have to be, they select on academic ability. It's not a comprehensive score, as you probably gathered. On their website, it doesn't tell you what the fees are, but I saw in an article somewhere else that they're about 21,000, up to 21,000 a year. So if you've got a couple of kids you want to put through it from the age of 4, which you can, up until 17, 18, it's going to cost you a hell of a lot of money. So you've got to be pretty well off. They do some bursaries and scholarships, but I think you'd have to be very intelligent and pass a lot of exams before you'd actually have any chance of getting one of those. But some of the people who've been there are Sacha Baron Cohen, Ali G, Vanessa Feltz. I have had the dubious honour of being on her programme as well over the years, and various other, luminaries in the media and in entertainment whose names we'd recognise, I'm sure. So anyway, so they currently have 7,000 children that they educate in different schools around. I think they've got more than one site. They've got a boys' school and a girls' school, and I think they maybe subsidise some other schools. Now, in March, they made this terrible discovery that Robert Ask had invested £500 at the time, which was about, I make that about 875K in today's money, in the Royal African Company. It was only about 1.3% of the value of his estate. So it wasn't a big part of his fortune, but he invested it in the Royal African Company. And they traded in West Africa, and they were extracting gold, but also people. They were involved in the slave trade. Now, of course, this gives, in the current climate, a big problem to Haberdasher's school, because they then find they're funded by a former slave trader. Now, the question that occurred to me at the time was, did he actually know this, or did he just invest his money in a company in the way people buy shares today? People buy shares in companies that make trainers. Do they know or do they care that people are working for pittances in countries like Pakistan and India to produce very expensive trainers in this country? They're not slaves exactly, but they're not exactly well-paid workers. So at the time, did he actually know this? Did he actually care? Don't forget that slavery has existed ever since the beginning of organized society. In fact, probably before organized society. It was certainly legal in some places, in many places at that time. I found out recently that slavery was actually legal in Saudi Arabia right up until the 1960s, when they were prevailed upon to actually make it illegal, and it still exists in the world today. Now, slavery is a terrible crime. It's a crime against humanity, terrible crime against individual people. But to think that it didn't exist in the past or people didn't profit from it is illusory. They did. Yeah. And not just the white people taking black people from Africa. The black slave trade, as you know, was driven by Arabs.
Yep.
They were the major drivers in that trade. And it's taken, and of course, you had black tribes enslaving other black tribes and selling them and all the rest of it. So it wasn't an exclusively white person's crime. It's a crime whoever does it. But anyway, that's the historical background to the whole thing. So what were they going to do about it? What is the school going to do about it? Because obviously in this politically correct age, they've got to do something. Well, they could just say, well, that's the historical fact. Like a lot of historical facts, it's unpleasant, it's unpalatable, but there we are. And a lot of good has been done with this money ever since. And don't forget, an awful lot of people from many different backgrounds will have profited and benefited from this education. But what do they do with that? They've consulted all the parents, all the school kids, all of the possible people who might be interested in, and they've come up with a solution, which is endorsed by Tom Newton Dunn in this article. In fact, interesting why there's an article at all, because I wouldn't have thought this was a very big story, but he's writing an apologia about it, justifying what they've done. Now, he didn't go to this school, by the way, because I looked him up. He went to Marlborough College. As far as I know, he never attended this school. So what they've decided to do is that Ask's name is being taken out of all school titles, as it may no longer make them comfortable learning environments. So they are deleting his name, but keeping his money and his the benefit of his investment.
Yeah.
But they are retaining his name as a formal legal name of the Federation to recognise his founding contribution to it. That tells me that there's a legal aspect to this. And of course, if he left this money in perpetuity, then there will be some kind of legal document. And I strongly suspect that they wouldn't be able to remove his name from it without actually losing out on whatever's left in the money. Interesting fact, I only found this out a few years ago. Dick Whittington, the famous mayor of London, who the pantomime is is named after, actually, he left money in the City of London, and that money is accumulated and is still used for charitable purposes today. And we're going back to the early 1400s. That's incredible. Mm. But anyway, so that would be my guess, is that they can't ditch Robert Ask completely, and they've had to keep his name in the formal legal sense in some form here. So what's it all about? Well, they've got various options, haven't they? They could say, well, we're going to close down the school. Whatever money's left, we're going to send it all to Africa, or we're going to set up a slave reparation fund or pay into whatever fund there is. Or they could ask all the people that are still alive who benefited to this education to actually make a contribution to such a fund, couldn't they? And say, well, you got a very good education, you had a very good living out of it, so you should make a contribution to slave reparations. They're not going to do that. Or they could just do the sensible thing and say, well, this is all in the past. Yes, it did happen. Yes, it's bad. Did he or didn't he know that he'd actually done this, that he was funding a slave trade? Did he have any idea what the repercussions were of the 500 quid he invested? And since nobody knew this until March anyway, this year, so they've taken 330 years to find out, does it really matter? In a sensible world, we'd say, well, it's a very bad show. You know, he shouldn't have been investing money in that. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Enormous good has been done by his bequest. So we'll just put it on the historical record and say, bad luck, and we'll get on with our lives. But you can't do that in the modern world, because political correctness is now has replaced any common sense that might once have existed. And of course, then Tom Newton Dunn has to come along and write this apologia for the whole thing and explain why it's a good thing. And there's a lesson for Britain here and a model for how our fractured nation should go forward through the woke wars. Yeah. And we need people like him to tell us how to do it. So I think this story really illustrates the hypocrisy of the woke politically correct class. Because what it underlines is that there are different rules for everybody else, but different rules than them. They have their own set of rules, which is they can get on with it while everybody else has to toe the politically correct line. You know, this is in line with people like Diane Abbott, who thinks everybody should go to a state school, a comprehensive school, but not her kids, because they deserve to go to a private school and she's able to pay for it. And I'm sure you'll find many people like that across all the political boundaries, whether they be the Labour Party or the Tory Party. Well, you couldn't blame a Tory for doing it because they believe in private education, or they're supposed to anyway. I'm sure they don't believe in it very much anyway, but they're supposed to, whereas Labour are not. And yet Labour's full of people who send their kids to private schools because they can afford to do it and they know that they'll get a better education. They're hypocrites. My kids went to a state school. If I could have afforded to send them to a school like Haberdashers, then I would have done, but I couldn't because I wanted them to have the best education possible. But there you are. We live in an age of hypocrisy as well as politically correct wokeness.
Well, talking about wokeness and PC, if we go over to Afghanistan, and here we have shock horror, EU, and this was Biden did it as well, but we'll look at the EU. EU blasts new Taliban form government as neither inclusive nor representative.
Shock horror.
So they've criticized on the government that was formed, and they criticize as being neither inclusive nor representative of the country's ethnic and religious diversity. What religious diversity? What? It's ethnically diverse because Afghanistan is just shoved together with all different groups. But it does not look like the inclusive and representative formation of Afghanistan's rich ethnic and religious diversity that we hope to see and the Taliban promised in recent weeks, an EU spokesman said in a statement. What planet are they living? Do they expect some transgender representative on the new Taliban cabinet?
Well, I've been watching this, and of course, the man that they installed, various commentators in the US, like Dave Rubin, who I've been watching during the week, commenting on this, And of course, the man they the Americans installed to be president of Afghanistan, while he originally came from Afghanistan, he was a professor from the John Hopkins University. And both of his kids go to are qualified in the US and work in the US, I believe. Instead of selecting somebody to be president who could actually understand the country and have some authority over these many disparate bands of tribes that live there, they chose an American academic. And then, of course, they tried to force on these people the politically correct woke agenda that the Americans' media and academic societies have adopted. And, of course, the Afghans didn't want it. And obviously, the Taliban didn't want it, but I don't suppose most normal Afghans wanted it either, which has probably helped contribute to the success of the Taliban. So a big surprise then that the new regime is not going to embrace ethnic and religious diversity. Why would they? Why would anybody be surprised about that? And the EU, of course, now, I don't know whether the EU is generally surprised by this or they just have to say this for form's sake, you know, that they're disappointed that it isn't going to happen. And, of course, I saw that the EU is now threatening that they won't get their $1 billion in aid. Well, if I was the Taliban, I'd be saying, well, you can stick your $1 billion in aid up your jacksie, because we have just been given a marvellous present from the US of $85 billion worth of military equipment, as well as a load of cash, which the Americans left behind. What are you going to do with all this equipment? Well, they're now more, they have a better equipped army than I think 80 or 90% of the most of the countries in the world. They've got, 200 helicopters and airplanes. They've got 600,000 small arms. They've got 1,000 or 2,000 military vehicles. I mean, they've got a marvellous army that most countries couldn't possibly afford. So what are they going to do with it? Well, they'll probably use quite a bit of it themselves. They will probably also sell a lot of that to other countries like China, like Russia, who probably want to get a look at the American technology, you know, do what they always do, strip it down and re-engineer it. And they will probably also sell a lot of this to other terrorist groups around the world. So they won't be in short of money. And, of course, as you pointed out the last time we had a chat on here, Peter, they're sitting on about $1 trillion worth of reserves in terms of natural resources, minerals, whatever, that can be used in modern technology. And who's going to come in and help them exploit that? The Russians and the Chinese, who have already lining up to shake their hands and wish them well.
And, of course, they had a ceremony. And they invited six nations, and China and Russia were two of them.
Yeah, and Pakistan has always been their chums, even though we send Pakistan loads of aid. They've got their own nuclear weapons program. They've got their own, the Indians got a space program. I'm not sure about the Pakistanis. But we send them money. You know, we rack up bills on our national credit card in order to send money to these people who are then supporting people like the Taliban. Well, why don't they have a diverse society? A bit odd, that, isn't it? You'd think they would, being members of such a peace and love religion. Well, if you look at the ethnic makeup of Afghanistan, which I had a look at, these are the latest estimates. They are made up of various groups of people, but the majority is Pashtun, which are about 42%. You've got Tajiks, which are about 27%. And then you've got Hazarari or something, 9%, Uzbek, 9%. And you gradually go down. And they've been warring with each other throughout their history. As you said, they've never been a coherent country. It's always been tribal societies living in mountainous territory, fighting each other. But the one thing that they'll unite against is outside invaders. Alexander the Great had a very tough time there trying to subdue it, and I think he gave up in the end, moved on somewhere else. You can't conquer an uncivilized society. You can only conquer a civilized society, and he moved off from there into India. So they're going to go back to their tribal ways. I think where they unite, as I said, is against an outside invader. So they united against the Russians, then they united against the US. Now they're in the ascendant, and from this they'll probably descend into tribal warfare amongst each other, unless the Chinese find that a hindrance to their money-making operations there, in which the Chinese might step in. Who knows? They're certainly giving problems to India on the Indian border. And diversity. Well, what do we mean by diversity? Well, you can forget half the population of women because they adhere to a fundamentalist version of Islam, which, of course, says that women don't have the same rights as men, if they have any rights, any rights at all. They're supposed to be 50% as intelligent as men. I'm not sure if that's in the Quran or the Hadith, but certainly women are only half as intelligent as men, according to Muhammad. They're in a court of law, there has to be two women's testimony against to match one man's. That's even if they ever get as far as a court of law in a place like Afghanistan. And of course, they're not allowed to play any part in politics, in academia, or in medicine. Mm-hmm. So I think women's rights have gone out the window. And if you are LGBT, whatever, then I wouldn't rate your chances very highly of being tolerated in Afghanistan either. And who's to blame for all this? I'm not sure they could have been stopped from taking over, but the big fiasco of the last week or two has been the rout of the American forces and their disastrous withdrawal. And who's responsible for that? Well, who supported Biden throughout the presidential election? All the world's establishment. Even if they didn't do it directly, they were doing it indirectly. The EU, the world's media, the world's political establishment, as soon as the great pretender, and he is a pretend president, he didn't win that election, it was stolen. But Boris Johnson was ringing him up as soon as the result was declared that he'd managed to secure, you know, millions more votes, God knows how, not yet to be established how he got all those votes, of course. Perhaps we'll never know. But, of course, the world's establishment are to blame for this because they backed Biden and he's shown himself to be totally incompetent and unable to manage the situation. And as I said the last time, I think I was on your program, wasn't I, Peter? I said you can't really blame Biden because he was never going to make any decisions anyway. No. But he has introduced this, how do you call it, chaos into these affairs, because the people who should be making decisions are now more concerned about whether they're waving LGBT flags than they are actually doing the job that they should supposed to be doing. The American military is more concerned about all this now than actually managing this disastrous situation. And this is why we ended up where we are. And the Chinese and the Russians, more so the Chinese and the Russians, are laughing at America and taking advantage of it. And we'll continue to take advantage of it. And as long as, well, actually, if the senile old fool stays there any longer, it's not going to make much difference whether he goes or not, because the people who are making the decisions, it's not Biden. Personally, I was predicting that he'd be gone by March, and he's still there. I'm surprised he's still there. Don't know how long he can hang on. But, of course, once he goes, who's going to replace him? Kamala Harris. That's going to be a big improvement, isn't it? So the world will pay for this debacle, because I think if Trump had been there, at least there would have been an orderly withdrawal.
Yep.
And at least I think the Americans wouldn't have made the Taliban a gift of $85 billion worth of military equipment and all the other millions and millions of dollars that they actually left there in hard cash. Yeah, and maybe you could have even done some kind of deal where the West gets to benefit from their reserves of minerals rather than hand it all over to the Chinese.
I don't think we'll maybe never know why. I think Biden seemed to purposely collapse because he seemed to know that the Taliban were moving in and yet did nothing. Anyway, let's move on to onto COVID. We need to touch on COVID. I know it goes
on. How can we avoid it?
It goes on and on and on. So, again, stuff that people talk about seems to keep coming true. Here we have a new FOI, so Freedom of Information request, reveals Fauci agency funded pathogen enhancement at Wuhan lab. More than 900 pages of documents released detail US-funded research by EcoHealth Alliance on several types of coronavirus at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. As reported, the documents describe the work of EcoHealth Alliance, a US-based health organization that used federal funding to conduct research at the Chinese lab. These documents include two previously unpublished grant proposals funded by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, as well as project updates related to the research. Well, not only is US funding gone to this, but this, again, when they talk about enhancement, this is about gain of function, which is about taking a virus and making it more deadly, more dangerous. You can only try and fathom for what reason would the US want to make a virus more deadly than it was. So, yeah, this obviously has come out in the last couple of weeks and has led to a lot of other piece of information coming out, and still Fauci doesn't admit that this is true.
Yeah, and it's not new. Really, it's not news, because this was said very early on. And I think it was Dr. Judy Mikovits who was talking about this way back in mid-2020, when she said that Fauci and his institute had given $3.7 million, that was the figure I distinctly remember, in order to transfer this research to the Wuhan lab, because it was made illegal in America, because I think the Congress said that, you know, again, this question, why would you make something that doesn't affect human beings affect human beings? Why would you create a new disease when you don't need to? And so therefore they outlawed this this research. So what did Fauci do? He moved it to the Wuhan lab, which, of course, I believe was even illegal to do that anyway, because they were using taxpayer dollars to actually fund something which shouldn't have been funded in the US. So how can you justify funding it in China? He's consistently lied about this. And in fact, I was watching him even during the week testify and saying that this didn't happen. But we know that it did. They're trying to talk their way around it, but it's not actually what it seems, but we know it's what it seems. Now, why would you engineer a virus to affect human beings that doesn't already affect human beings? Well, I think there's two reasons for that. Number one, it's because the drug industry want to create new diseases so that they then can create a vaccine to combat it and create an opportunity for making billions of dollars of profit, which is exactly what's happened with COVID. And this goes back, so I understand, to the Clinton era, when it was made possible for research scientists funded by the government to actually patent their vaccines and personally make enormous profits out of this, instead of those patents belonging to the state, so that the state could then, if vaccines were required, they can produce them and sell them at a reasonable price, you know, to the general public. This, as I understand from what I've been researching during the year, is one of the core reasons for this problem. This is why you've got so many vaccines now. It's because it makes big profits for scientific researchers like Fauci and for big drug companies. And it takes that away from the state itself and the people who funded the research, which are ordinary people, ordinary taxpayers. So that's one reason for doing it. The reason that the Chinese were happy to benefit from this, because they want it as a biological weapon. Chinese generals have written books about this, about what the next war might look like. And it isn't going to be about a nuclear exchange, because nobody benefits from that. That's an absolute final resort of desperation, you know, if that happens. Then they don't want to fight a war, conventional war, because, well, they probably wouldn't win one against the US up until this current point anyway. And it would be very costly in men and materials and might be undecisive. So they've talked about how you would wage war. You'd wage a cyber war because you want to attack people's computer systems, their satellite systems, how all their infrastructure works, because everything works on computer now. And biologically, you drop biological weapons on. Don't forget, they're not constrained by any treaties that they're going to observe or by the Geneva Convention or anything like that. They'd be quite happy to drop biological weapons on people if they thought it would help them win a war. And, of course, you don't have to kill people in millions in order to win a war. You just have to frighten them. And we've already seen this, how this has worked, because people have been terrified over this, which, you know, and we all know the figures that it doesn't actually, affects people who are already have damaged immune systems, they're already elderly. It's just like a very bad flu. But doesn't matter, because people are terrified of it and still going around in their masks, etc. So it works. So if you wanted to deploy a biological weapon against your enemy, you don't have to kill millions of them. You just have to frighten them out of their wits, which works very well. Now, how did it get released? Well, I don't think we'll ever know the truth about that, whether it was done deliberately or whether it was by accident. But you had Dr. Robert Malone on your program on Thursday, and one interesting thing he said was that the truth will never be revealed, because both sides may be found to be complicit.
Yeah.
So this is why the Fauci and his chums are lying about ever funding this research, because they're, even if they weren't responsible for its release, they are guilty, they are complicit with the Chinese in producing the virus and it therefore in it, the damage that it's done ever since. So it's all very depressing, isn't it? As usual, we're talking about the COVID debacle. One interesting thing Fauci said as well, which I saw this week on the Dave Rubin report on YouTube, and Fauci said there's this new thing now called a Delta variant. I don't know why they call it the Delta variant. I don't know. Delta's got to do with it. You said it's the fourth letter of the Greek alphabet. So is it the fourth strain we've had of this? I don't know. But anyway, the Delta variant was shown to infect the vaccinated as much as the unvaccinated. So what Fauci's saying is when they've done tests for this new supposed variant, if it exists, it's affecting the vaccinated as much as the unvaccinated. So therefore, what is the point of being vaccinated? If you've been vaccinated against COVID, whether the vaccine works or not, and then another variant comes along and you're affected just as badly, then what's the point in taking any vaccine? It's not protecting you. And one good point was made about this, because when I've had people say, oh, you know, I'm going to have the jab, and I say, why are you having it? I don't know. And I say, well, it doesn't stop you. The NHS will tell you it doesn't stop you getting infected. If you are infected and you've had the vaccine, it doesn't stop you passing it on to somebody else. So what's the point? And Malone made a very interesting point on your program. If you have been vaccinated, what people say to me is, it means I won't suffer so much. I don't know whether that's true. Personally, I don't believe it, but let's say it's true. So you've been vaccinated, you get the virus, you don't feel too bad at all, you go out, you're passing it on to everybody else. So it would be better if it made you a little iller and you stayed at home in bed for a few days until you got over it. Because being vaccinated and having less symptoms, if that actually happens, means you're free to go off and pass it on to everybody else. And you may not know you even got it, but you're still passing it on. So what is the bloody point of having a vaccine and being vaccinated? And yet it's been forced down everybody's throat.
And I think they're learning that in Israel, the most vaccination and yet got the highest COVID rates per million of population. And the Fauci was asked that and he couldn't come up with an answer of why that was the case. And there's Elaine Jennings says, and it's true because I saw this today, we didn't bring it up or mention it. Most of the contributors to The Lancet are tied to Wuhan. So this was a story that The Lancet published a letter from 27 individuals, and it said that it debunked any link between the virus and the Wuhan lab. 26 out of the 27 has just come out yesterday, have got links to the Wuhan lab. So, yeah, you can't...
Well, what I would say, but, you know, I mean, this has been, you know, my over the last 20 years has been an unpleasant experience in many ways in watching the way that the modern society works. And I would say now, where I am now, is you cannot believe anything that you are told by government, by the media, or even by academia, because they misrepresent to you facts to you, they withhold facts, or they outright lie all of the time. The plain unvarnished truth is the last thing you will get now out of anybody in authority. And a lot of people who know the truth are frightened to speak out because it means that they will jeopardize their own jobs, their own livelihoods, their own futures. We are getting like this old Soviet Union, where we live in a world of lies, and the only way to survive is to go along with the lies and live a kind of life below the lies, where you do what you have to do, what you need to do in order to survive, without actually believing it. And our society has now been corrupted to that extent where people are doing that more and more, and they're going to have to do it.
Jared, we've got about three more stories. If I limit you to 3 or 4 minutes a story, I don't have a buzzer or a gavel, but we'll see. This is story, teenage boys. This is from the Telegraph. just for YouTube, so when they're listening, this is the Daily Telegraph reporting this, as reported everywhere else. Teenage boys more at risk from vaccines than COVID. Young males are 6 times more likely to suffer from heart problems after being jabbed than be hospitalized from coronavirus, study finds. And this is looking, of course, at the 12 to 15 year old, because those are the group that are now being pushed to have the vaccine, even though it was recommended by the government's own scientific advisors, follow the science, that they no need for them to be vaccinated because they didn't have there was very small risk of them getting anything. So again, Jared, you follow the science, which is what we're told to do, and the science says actually that teenage boys, it's probably better for them not to get the vaccine, and they can just get the virus if they wish, and they'll be fine.
Well, one thing that virologists were saying from the start is that the people who are least affected by this are very young children and young adults, because they have the most robust immune systems. Mm. And I've seen a figure that the average age for people who die from COVID is 81, and that the average age for death is 80. So the people who are dying, averaged out, I know younger people have had something and died from it. I'm not saying they didn't. But the average, if you average it all out, it's very old people who are already ill, who have already got some underlying conditions. And the same people, if they got a very bad cold or flu, would also be likely to die. They don't die of it, they die with it, because they've already got a weakened system, and that just helps them out of the door, as it were. So the last people that actually need to take this are young people with healthy immune systems. Now, you do have to ask yourself what this is all about. It's about forcing people to have the vaccine, as many people as possible, and then you have to ask yourself why. Is it just about making billions of profits for the drug companies, or is there another underlying hidden cause for forcing people to have the vaccine?
Yeah. Let's move. What was there are whole different areas around that. One funny one was Chris Whitty will approve COVID jabs for teenagers because it will boost their mental health and social development. That's because you've screwed their mental health because you've locked them up at home. So again, you can't make it up. The government, as always, have made a problem and then come up with a solution to the problem that they have made in the first place. And we're supposed to say, well done.
Well, I'm glad my kids are grown up. I mean, they can make their own decision about this. But if they were at school now, how do you stop your kids? And I understand, I don't know what's happening here, but in Scotland, you know, they can vaccinate the kids without the parents even knowing about it. You know, your kid might come home from school and tell you it's been vaccinated. They ask the kids if they think it's a good idea. And they do it to them.
Yeah.
And that's what they would like to do here. So parents, you know, will lose control of them. What if you refuse to have your kid vaccinated? Will the social services come around and take the kid away? Quite possibly.
That's what I think we're moving towards. It's crazy.
We've moved into a totalitarian police state.
I know. If your child gets any medication, paracetamol, Calpol, whatever, that you're informed by the school before it happens, especially younger children. But now they can get a vaccine. It's madness that they can, at 12-year-olds, they can now make up their own minds, even though the government can make up its own mind. The government advisors say no, the government say yes. So if our government cannot even make up their own minds, how on earth is a 12-year-old supposed to understand?
Well, unfortunately, children are trusted and they'll believe the crap that people in the authority tell them.
Yeah, not completely. Over to the States, Biden to require all federal employees and contractors, not just employees, to be vaccinated. Biden is requiring all federal workers and government contractors to receive the COVID vaccine. Biden is expected to unveil executive orders, as he always does, because then he doesn't have to bother about the checks and balances. Executive orders on Thursday past as part of a broader plan to stop the spread of the virus. One of the orders will require all federal executive branch workers to be vaccinated, and the other orders the same employees of contractors that do business with the federal government, the Wall Street Journal reports. I always wonder, because why make it mandatory? If people are getting it, then why do you need to make it mandatory? I know the WHO talked about 70% back in May. If 70% got it, then we would be free. But again, all those promises don't really add up to anything. And I don't understand it. Basically, if you've got a mandatory vaccine program, it means you have failed as a government to convince the population.
Well, also, it's this will be challenged in the American courts, you know, but by the time that somebody's taken it to court and it's got to the Supreme Court, you've lost your job, you've lost your livelihood, you've lost your business.
Yeah.
And it's got to be against people's, you know, not their human rights, but their basic right as a human being not to have medical treatment forced on them that they don't. But this has all gone by the board. It's all gone out the window. You don't have any sovereignty over your own body anymore. In the sense that you can decide you don't want some particular medicine or treatment. You know, if you've got a fatal disease, you can choose not to be treated. You can decide that you're going to die, and they can't stop you. They can't force you to have surgery or treatment that you don't want, but they can force you to have this vaccine that you don't want, which is completely unknown territory. They don't know how it's going to affect people. As has been pointed out on the comments here, it's not actually a vaccine. It's gene therapy because it's altering people's genetics. Mm-hmm. It's a completely new and novel means of combating a virus. Nobody knows if it's really going to work or indeed what the longer term complications might be, if there are any. It's completely unknown territory. So if you wanted to a voyage into this unknown territory, you'd ask for volunteers, wouldn't you? You know, who's more frightened of the virus than what the drug company's latest product might do to them? Well, you give them a chance to exercise their right of free choice. Well, free choice is disappearing out the window. And you've seen, that's what's happened in America. You've seen in France that they're trying to force this through, and now they're saying that people can't go into restaurants and cafes unless they have a certificate saying they've been vaccinated. I spoke to Liz Phillips today, who's been on your program, used to work with me, and she has links to France. Knows lots of people there, and she says that a lot of restaurants and cafes are ignoring this because it's destroying their business because they've lost so many business of people who don't want to do this. And you've seen, again, the riots on the streets. You've seen the thug police out bashing people with their truncheons as they protest against this in Paris and other places. And why would you completely fracture your society and do this as like President Macron and these other people over a drug that your own experts, if they're giving you real independent advice, will be telling you, we don't really know what the long-term ramifications are of this and whether it will work. You know, we've never been told the truth about this. We've been lied to from the start by Boris, you know, Boris the bumbler. That's his job, to lie to you and do it with a smile and make a joke. It's like putting Bernard Manning in Downing Street. It'll make you laugh, but you wouldn't have much confidence that things are going to be run properly.
It's true. I'm going to do a short video on Wednesday looking at the main vaccine, the main pharmaceutical companies and the money they're making out of the vaccine. And at $6 billion so far, vaccines at around $20 to $25 a pop, that you're well over. Yeah, so it's crazy money.
It's all the Mickey Mouse money anyway. So the government's going to afford it because they're just printing more money all the time. All that's going to hit the buffers at some point.
Yeah. Final story is, oh, we may touch one more, but winter lockdown fears spark. This is just when you thought it was safe to come out. Winter fears sparked as number 10 warns it could take further steps, just like a threat against your person you have hostage. New fears of a winter lockdown have emerged as Downing Street warned they were willing to take further steps if necessary to tackle COVID. It comes after Boris Johnson planned to extend draconian COVID rules for another 6 months. And number 10 told us that we are one of the most open societies in Europe. This had been possible because of the success of the vaccine rollout, but they wouldn't hesitate to take further steps to combat the virus. I talked to many people and they said they wanted to take the vaccine because it would give them their freedom back. But it doesn't seem whatever you do, Boris does not want to give you your freedom back.
Look, Peter, anybody that thinks that what's happened to us over the last 18, 19 months, however it's been long now since March 2020, is about combating a virus, has either got their eyes and their ears closed or has got shit for brains.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with combating a virus. I said when they lifted the last lockdown that there would be another one, and there was. I've been predicting that there'll be another lockdown in the autumn, September or October. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I've been thinking a lot about that. Maybe they won't have a full lockdown, because when you think, what was the purpose of all this anyway? Was it about combating the virus, or was it about encouraging and forcing people to take a vaccine? And it seems to be, with what we've just been talking about, it's more about forcing people to have a vaccine than it is about anything else, even though the vaccine, there's no guarantee it will help you or it will be effective. So what's it all? Will there be another lockdown? Quite possibly, especially when we get into the autumn and people start getting the flu that's disappeared in the last year and a half, and they get colds and sniffles, because everything's going to be interpreted as COVID. So we'll have to go back to, you know, some kind of lockdown and masks. So what's it all about? My view is that there's two reasons for this. Number one, it's about instilling fear and compliance in people so that you can make them do that which is obviously detrimental to them, like ruining their livelihoods, destroying their businesses, completely restricting their right to travel, go on holiday, and their personal freedom. It's about instilling fear in order to get compliance. Number two, why do they want compliance? My view is because they know that the financial system is going to hit the buffers and that there's going to be a financial and economic collapse. You cannot keep creating all of these trillions of dollars and pounds out of thin air and expect it to go on forever. At some point, the real economy is going to hit the buffers. Mm. And then you're going to have to control people. Because when the food runs out, we're all, you know, they're blaming it on Brexit at the moment, I know. The reason that you have economic collapses, and we've had them in the past, is not because there's a shortage of goods and services. You know, you didn't have the 1929 collapse of the economies around the developed world because we ran out of food, we ran out of natural resources. You had it because the financial system collapsed, and the financial system services the economic system and makes it work. You've got to have money, you've got to have currency to make it work. And what's happened with our money and currency? It's been completely debased. They're printing it by the trillion out of thin air, and sooner or later that's going to hit the buffers. When that happens, they want to be able to control people completely, and in order to do that, they have to have already intimidated them and frightened them into complete compliance. And we're well on the way to that. You still go, you know, I go around, I've been on the tube this week and out and about. You've still got half the people wearing masks. Mm. You still people see sitting in cars wearing masks and riding bikes wearing masks. And the one thing that you can be certain of, if you do 5 minutes research into this whole thing, is that a cloth mask will not protect you from a virus, because it will pass between the fibers of a cloth mask. Because they're so small, a virus is so tiny. Mm. If you wanted to have an effective protection against the virus, you'd have to wear one of these suits that they wear in places like Portland Down, where they're completely, totally covered. There's no avenue into your body, and you've got an air supply, so you're not breathing the outside air. So if you want to walk around the street wearing one of those and go to Tesco's, well, buy yourself one. Don't know how much they cost, because a bloody well mask is not going to protect you. And I just wish people could understand that, because they, to my mind, whenever I see them, they just look completely ridiculous. And the people I really feel angry about are the medical professionals in hospitals who require you to wear a mask.
Yeah.
And they should know above everybody else that they are bloody useless. So they're supposed to be professionals who spent 7 years becoming doctors and whatever, you know, whatever aspect of the medical profession they practice. And they don't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it just makes my blood boil.
Gerard, we'll throw in the lift story at the end. Let's throw that in.
Oh yeah.
As we've hit our 1 hour mark.
I said we wanted to end on a light note, but it's not very light for the poor sod who we're talking about, whoever he or she was.
This is a strange story from the Sun. Body shock, mystery as rotten human skeleton found in hospital lift, which hasn't been opened for 24 years.
Now, when I saw this, Peter, I immediately thought it was somebody who was still waiting for an NHS appointment and, you know, had fallen asleep, and then they discover their skeleton 24 years later. But then you find out the hospital is actually in Pakistan, I think, isn't it?
No, I think it might be North India. I think
North India.
Yeah. That's what it will be like. People waiting for their operations, what, 5.5-6 million on the waiting list.
Well, the doctors don't really want to see anybody anymore. They want to, you know, I know people who've got medical conditions. Doctors want to do diagnoses over the phone. How you diagnose somebody with a physical problem over the phone, I don't know, when you can't see them and touch them and feel them, which is what doctors are supposed to do, aren't they? And look at it, look into their eyes and their mouth and whatever they do to diagnose something. I know a lady who lives not far from here. I was speaking to a neighbor the other day. She died of cancer. She didn't get to see a doctor till 2 weeks before her death. By then, it was too late to treat her, and she died. How many people are there like that out there? I dread now having to need the National Health, because basically my view of it, if you're taken ill on the street and an ambulance comes and picks you up and you need a heart operation or something, you've got a chance. If you're just ill and you need to see a doctor, then forget it. It's a it's a self-serving bureaucracy. It's a bureaucracy that's there to serve the bureaucrats, not the people who actually need it and pay for it. And I bitterly resent having to pay tens and tens of thousands of pounds in tax over the years in order to have something that you can't actually use. Try and make an appointment with a doctor and see how you get on these days. You know, my wife's had to wait 18 months to get an appointment to have some treatment. And they wanted to diagnose her over the phone. Luckily, it's not a life-threatening condition, but it's still painful, and she wanted it seen to. And, you know, it's just one in millions of cases, you know. Anyway.
On that, I think we will draw to a close. I can't even bring in all the comments down the side, but thank you to our viewers for watching. And please do like. If you're watching, you enjoy Gerard, click that thumbs up. And do subscribe to whichever platform you're watching on. Let me give you, so here's a positive. Here's a map, and the map shows you the just a couple of ones just to finish off with. Jared will not really comment on them, just to show. This shows the 28 states that the governors or the attorney generals in the states are opposing vaccine mandates. So that's something positive happening. Now, of course, it could be worse. You could be in Australia. Let me play this 30-second Australian clip.
The most tyrannical coronavirus restrictions, Australia is telling the rest of the world to hold its beer, literally. According to multiple news reports, the New South Wales Health Department in Australia is now limiting the amount of alcohol that residents can get delivered to their homes. Residents who are locked down are allowed just six beers, six, or a bottle of wine per day. That's it. Residents of one apartment complex said the health department's searching all bags and packages that come into the building. Any alcohol above the limit, immediately confiscated.
So it could be worse. So I apologize for Australian friends. It's obviously bad down there, and you can't even turn to alcohol to get rid of the issues. There was one other one I wanted to play, and that was actually, there were two. So here's Biden giving his wisdom. This was December, I think 4th of December, 2020.
No, I don't think it should be mandatory. I wouldn't demand to be mandatory, but I would do everything in my power. It's like, I don't think masks have to be made mandatory nationwide.
Oh, so he doesn't think the vaccine should be mandatory, and he doesn't think masks should be mandatory. It's amazing how obviously his masters told him something different.
One of the dangers, Peter, in not being able to think for yourself is that you're subject to whoever's written your speech that day. And I presume he has more than one speechwriter, so you can't blame him when he contradicts himself.
He gets confused. This was the White House press secretary giving a very ominous answer. Question. Here it is.
To use your word, how bold is the president willing to be as far as the private sector is concerned in the vaccine mandate area, even if they don't have federal contracts? Can the Department of Labor or anybody else compel major employers, the large employers, to force the vaccine mandates on their employees?
Yes. Stay tuned. More to come this afternoon.
stay tuned. It's just getting worse and worse. So she said that with a smile. Crazy. On that, I'll not play any more. Thank you to our viewers for watching. Thank you. If you've been listening on Podbean and the others, thank you for that. I will be back with you on Monday with a wonderful guest who runs a organization called Action for Canada. And I am just, so it's Tanya Gaw's Action for Canada with a four.com. Her name is Tanya Gaw. She has been involved in campaign. She started campaigning when Trudeau became Prime Minister. Obviously, Canadian elections coming up in the 20th. So she joined to talk about the great work she does, Action for Canada. It's a really interesting, or I've been going through the website, and they're very, very engaged, a activist organization. They're achieving a lot. And they launched in February 2020, which was in Hearts of Oaklawn. So it was great talking to her, did a pre-record. She's over on the west coast of Canada. So that'll be on Monday. It will not be on YouTube. I think that she talked freely, and I thought, do I want to actually restrict what she says or let her talk? So I let her go, and that means it's not going to be on YouTube. So you can watch on all the other platforms, but not on YouTube, because she speaks extremely frankly about the work she's doing in combating the misinformation that's going out on COVID, and the what doctors are doing with the vaccine and treatment. So very interesting, very enlightening. Tune in on Monday for Tanya Gaw from Action for Canada. And if you haven't subscribed to our weekly email, go to heartsofoak.org, click on that connect tab, put in your name and email, and you'll get our weekly email with what's coming up. Emails are not censored as yet. Social media is at times. So certainly do that, and we can keep in touch with you. And remember, all the videos are available at heartsofoak.org/livestream. You can click on that live stream tab, and all the guest interviews are up there. So do make use of that. Any questions, any ideas, any recommendations, drop us an email, info@heartsofoak.org, and we'll go through those and get back to you, or just message us on any social media platform. And Gerard, thank you. It's great to have you. As always, we could have talked for 2 or 3 hours. I don't know if our viewers could listen for that long, but thank you for your time, for going over those stories. It's always great fun. So thank you, Gerard.
Yeah, thanks, Peter, for asking me on. And thanks for everybody for watching. And also the comments. I'm sorry we don't have time to comment on the comments, but lots of people are writing in, doing our best to have a look at them on the screen there. But thank you very much for everybody for taking part.
Tons of guys. I always go through the comments after. So whatever goes up there, I do read through them. Sometimes it's 300, 400 comments, yeah. But I do flick through them and go, and it's always interesting, helpful. So thank you for your comments. And we don't always manage to pull them in and engage, but thank you for them anyway. And on that, we'll let you go. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday evening. Enjoy your Sunday, whenever, however you're watching. And look forward to seeing you on Monday with Tanya Gaw, Action for Canada. So thank you and good evening.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening. Censorship is real. To sign up for our weekly email and find links to all of our platforms, go to heartsofoak.org. Please like, subscribe and share, and in the words of Churchill, keep buggering on.